This is the Joy of Gaming. Welcome to the Joy of Gaming podcast, episode 4. I'm your host, Rich Lepore, and I'm here with
Jordan Alseca
and Tim McNeil.
And today we have a special guest, friend of the show in town.
Hey, my name is Adam.
And he'll be talking about some of the games he's played recently and catch us up on what he's been playing. We're going to talk about what we've been playing, of course, like we always do. We're going to kick into some news about some new localizations that were announced, some Kojima news. A rumor about Xbox, what is it, 540 or what is it, 720?
720 would be the name right now that people are using.
Something like that.
I think it's obvious rumor.
I do not think it'll be probably really called that. And then we are going to talk about the Vita pretty in depth because we got ours on Wednesday. And we haven't had too much time to play with it, but we'll give our first impressions. But with no further ado, Jordan, what have you been playing, man?
I've obviously been playing a lot with my Vita, but other than that, the majority of the past couple of weeks, I've played Tales of the Abyss on the 3DS.
Right.
Because I wanted a game for my 3DS, which has kind of just been gathering dust lately. But it's
because
really
you
fun.
You didn't pick up Resident Evil.
But yeah, awesome. I didn't pick up Resident Evil because I had to save for the Vita. But
right.
For some reason, I decided I'd sell some things. I got Tales of the Abyss because I had just finished Final Fantasy XIII 2, which I'll talk about in a minute. I just wanted some more RPG fun, and I'm really enjoying Tales of the Abyss.
Is this your first Tales game?
No, my first was Tales of Symphonia for the GameCube.
Okay.
And playing that one, I remembered feeling this way, and playing this one, I feel it again. It really bums me out that only about half of the Tales games even get released here. There's so many that stay Japan exclusive, and they're really fun. They're kind of, they're traditional fantasy stories most of the time, but they're really well told. And Tales of the Abyss specifically has had a really good story with cast of characters I'm really enjoying getting to know. A fun real-time battle system that is it makes it so that the battles don't get too repetitive. They go quickly. I've put about 27, 28 hours into it already.
Have you gotten to that point I'm always asking you about? That point where it's like, I think it's like 2/3 of the way through the game and you're back home and then like a couple days pass and...
I've been back there a few times, so I don't really know what you're talking
it's
about.
It's weird. For some reason, I got to this point. I played Tales of the Abyss maybe a year or two ago on PlayStation 2, and there was this point I got to where I stopped, and I kind of regret it that I had stopped at this point, but it's like it felt like the start of what would be in The Legend of Zelda, like the second quest. But to me, it felt like that, and I just... felt like I got back from defeating this big boss and that the main quest had sort of concluded in my mind and I just didn't really want to embark. And then I think I ended up trading it in or I don't know what ended up happening, but I never passed it. So I'm locked in on wondering
I'm at that because the plot's still going strong so far for me. There was the big twist with the main character.
Right.
And the thing I'll say about that game that I'm really enjoying is that it doesn't sacrifice story for the gameplay. There are a lot of sections where you'll just be going through a lot of story chunks, which I know some people might not like, but I've been enjoying a lot of the character stuff. And one of the things I really like about that game that I think some RPGs don't do as well is that a lot of RPGs do the save the world plot, where you gather a group of people and you go around and you save the world. But the thing I liked about this game was that it didn't start off with that, and it started with just trying to get this guy home after... What happens is Luke is the son of a noble, and he's been locked in his mansion for 7 years ever since he was kidnapped, and someone shows up one day and attacks him, and something happens, and they get teleported across the world. And so the first part of the game is trying to get him back to his country, back to the house he started at. So the majority of the beginning of the game is just a world tour. And, you know, you get all these people, and you see the world, and you meet characters at these different locations. And sometimes in RPGs, you'll go to a town once, but you never have to go back there. The thing I like about this is you're always going from familiar place to familiar place. The dungeons are different, but you get to know each town. You get to know their personalities of the people that live there. So that when I'm saving the world or when someone dies, it's a little more impactful than if I just gotten there an hour ago and suddenly it's doomed. So I'm really digging that part of the story.
I see what you're saying. So it's like it plants the seed plot wise.
Yeah.
A lot. And so that when you go back, the seed has grown into this tree of well, I'm extending this metaphor too far, but when you go back there, you actually give a shit.
And it's stuff like that it's been really just cool to go through. I'm enjoying the story, and I will be getting back to it eventually because I played it every day for a week.
Don't do what I did.
No,
you'll regret it.
I
regret it to this day.
So I've been enjoying that. Like I said earlier, the other thing I've been playing a lot of was Final Fantasy 13 2, which I finished.
Okay.
And I think, you know, you might have heard...
Oh, good. He's mellowing on it.
Mellowing on it how?
Oh, man.
What are you talking about?
My hopes are dashed.
Did you want me to dislike it?
No. I was thinking that maybe after a couple weeks you were like, maybe it wasn't as awesome as I thought, but I'm wrong.
I'm on the camp that I liked it more than 13. I liked Noel and Sarah more than I did Lightning as a main character.
More than six freaking characters that are all... Anyway.
There were other characters, the plot, they might not have been in the party. The thing a lot of people have had problems with is the ending, which whether you've played it or not, you've probably heard that the ending is pretty open-ended. But it's not as open-ended as it could have been. The story that 13-2 tells ends. It's just that it adds on a kind of to be continued.
Yeah.
And the way I told this to Rich earlier was, if you've played 13, you know at the end of that, and this is spoilers if you haven't played Final Fantasy 13, but at the end of that, you know, Lightning, the Vanille and Fang, they make the Crystal Pillar and they save Cocoon, and then Lightning, Sarah and Saz's son Dodge comes back. Everything ends up happily. In the beginning of 13, you find out. The beginning of 13-2, you find out that something has happened. Lightning didn't come back. She disappeared. Nobody remembers her showing up. She just was gone, and only Sarah remembers her. The ending to 13-2 would kind of be like if 13 ended that way, with Lightning disappearing and nobody knowing what happened.
Like the first 2 minutes of the next game.
Yeah. So the plot ended, but it just set up game for what would be either DLC or more story or in another game.
I just don't think the world is expansive enough to try to be Star Wars like that, you know? To me, I felt that the game was done after 13 and the story was done and just, I don't know, I haven't played 13-2, but if you've been listening before, I'm kind of iffy on the idea of doing so anyway. But that just seems even more to extend it with it. I mean, is the story really that immersive that you feel it could go to another game?
Well, it looks like it's going to go to a third game, right?
Yeah, I know.
Well, I don't know that it necessarily is, but I think this is what we can kind of expect from Square Enix from now on, just because, you know, 13's development cycle was so long.
And the prohibitive costs.
Yeah, the prohibitive costs. You know, the reason we're probably going to see more sequels like this is 15 is still years off. They haven't even really talked about it.
What about Versus 13? I'm going to kill somebody.
Yeah, that's another game, but I think that they're going to want to reuse these assets. I mean, there's new assets in 13-2, but I think they've made all this stuff, and to do nothing more with it would be something they don't want. They want to be able to get more use out of these assets, not as a money grab, just so that they can be making games and providing games. And
not a money grab, but a money like, oh my God, my money's going down the sewer. I got to grab it before it falls. I mean, like, they've invested so much in this world. And these days, RPGs don't sell like they did when Final Fantasy VII was out. I mean, you don't get multi-million sellers, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of fine with the idea of them making new games off of one. So, you know, as opposed to treating Final Fantasy XIII as just a single game, as treating it as a franchise. But I wish if they did that, they would not make the stories as grand in scheme. Because if you had a bunch of characters, and the story that you had was just one character's story in, like, a larger world, then if you had another character who branched off and did another story within that world, and it felt like it was fulfilling it, you know, I wouldn't mind that. Because then it's like, oh, you know, you hear Han Solo's story or something like that. You hear all those things. So that feels expansive. But this, it's just like, you already saved the world. How could it get bigger scheme than that?
No, you're right. It's like if it could have been that, like, you were fighting against, like, let's say there were multiple, if they knew they wanted to do multiple games, which is debatable if they did, but from the beginning. But let's say they knew it. They could have set up multiple cities within the world, and that, like, one game could focus completely on, you know, an evil emperor taking over one city, or the Falci taking over one city, or even one big continent or one big landmass.
Something I like in games that are like Mass Effect, you've got a situation that is threatening the galaxy, and this isn't going to be really a spoiler, it's in Mass Effect 2. You had a two-year time period between Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 1 and Mass Effect 2.
That's true, yeah.
And I would like to see stories involving some of the characters from 1, seeing what they did during those 2 years. Because if you come in at the beginning of 2, you know, you've got characters like Garrus, who are now taking down Mercs on Omega 4. You've got characters like Liara, who are going after the Shadow Broker. So I want to see more backstory to them.
And they do a little of that, to be fair, in the comics and the stories and the books, right?
That I don't know. I honestly haven't paid much attention to the comics or the books.
I know that the Liara story is covered in one of the comics. I think Redemption.
Well, I mean, and that's interesting is that there is stuff like that for Final Fantasy, but it doesn't get localized a lot. There was like a light novel for Final Fantasy 13, Episode 1 or something that filled in Lightning's disappearance. It just doesn't get localized because there's not really as much of a market for it here.
I should like get the whole text and stick it in Google Translate.
Still, for me, it just feels artificially extended, you know? It's just like, well, we wanted to not do an entirely new world because it would cost too much, so we're going to use the same stuff we have there. But it's just like, I wish they would have planned it from the beginning that way, you know? So you could see, like, a consistent design choice throughout.
Or how about totally different characters?
Well, I think
totally different characters. I mean, like, different members of that group that Snow leads.
Nora?
Yeah. Totally different Nora.
Yeah, I mean, like, in this situation, I mean, Nora, you saw them for, like, 10 seconds, and, you know, they were unimportant, and you knew they were unimportant. What if, you know, they were not just, you know, little, small, gimmicky joke characters for 10 seconds, but they were actual badasses, and they went off and were doing something, and maybe you communicated a little bit through them through, like, a radio or something like that as the story is progressing, and you knew they were doing something, but you never got to experience it. I'd like to see that sort of story, you know,
awesome.
Where you would go see their story then.
But you're talking about, you know, in that case, you're talking about pre-planning. You're talking about them knowing during those 4 years when they were struggling to put out and stay within budget, and they blew out the budget and the whole crystal engine or whatever. You know, you'd have to, during that crisis they were going through, they'd have to have had foresight that they didn't have.
Well, yeah. And I think the thing about the story is I think there's an element of them wanting to make sure that the mainline games can be played on their own, which is kind of the same with 10. You don't have to play 10-2 to get the complete story. And again, it's kind of like that with 13-2 where you don't, you know, 13's its own story. I think that what they did with the story, well, I think what they did with the story of 13-2 was kind of interesting because they kind of took the way they solved the problem of Cocoon falling in the end, and they turned it into sort of a short-term thing where it, because of the time travel, they set it up where eventually it's going to fall if nothing else is done. And that,
yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not saying it's great or that, it's my favorite Final Fantasy story ever, but I enjoyed it for what it was. But, you know, I really liked it, and I'm going to get the Saz DLC when it comes out next week.
Tell me about this. I don't know anything about that.
I
know you mentioned it.
It's hard to say without spoilers, but basically it's about Saz's time-traveling journeys.
Okay.
Because he also ends up doing this.
So this is definitely something you want to play post main quest.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay.
Well, and I don't know anything about the Final Fantasy series, so I'm going to have you guys fill me in a little bit. This might or might not be spoilers because, again, I don't know. But I heard from a lot of sources that the character who you saw hyped up for 13-2, you don't actually play. You have to get her in a DLC pack or something like that. How do you guys feel on that?
You're talking about Lightning. Yeah. I think what you're talking about is in all of the previews and stuff, it's like Lightning having this epic battle with this character named Caius, and the game starts with that, and I believe ends with it.
Hmm.
Or okay, well, I don't know. I haven't played it. You know what I mean?
That's something.
I haven't played it that far. But okay, what I've heard is why don't you tell us, Jordan?
Well, yeah,
what am I doing?
I mean, she was kind of hyped up in the previews, and she is a DLC character, but she acts like a monster, which is one of the things in the game. But I mean, it's a little irksome. But again, I didn't really like Lightning that much, so I didn't really care. So
female Cloud.
Yeah, that's all she was.
I'm
to
just
me.
Kidding. I don't even think so.
Yeah, I like Cloud more.
Yeah. So
I mean, female Cloud that wasn't as interesting to me.
I was just saying that, yeah. Man. That's what people say. I don't really necessarily.
No,
think
I agree.
I don't know if I even do, but.
So what you're saying is we won't see her in Kingdom Hearts 3.
I think you'll definitely see her in Kingdom Hearts 3.
You mean if the Kingdom Hearts 3 team can finish versus 13 any ever? Like, does anybody? No, of course you guys don't know anything about that. I was going to say, I mean, I just like wish there was someone I can ask. Let me tell you this little quick story. I was working at Ubisoft, and this guy came over to be a brand manager, and he was formerly of Square Enix. And so, like, immediately I pounce on him, and I was like, Versus 13, is it coming out ever? And he was actually, you know, a French guy and a really, really cool guy, this guy named Thomas, but He was just like, you know, what? I can't do an accent at all. But he was like, you know, what kind of employee would I be if I came and told you Square Enix secrets right away? You know, like, how could anybody trust me again? And so I was like, great, no more Versus 13 information. And I think I probed him a couple more times, and he just gave me, like, this knowing look. But because it's Square Enix, like, I can't decipher that. You know what I mean? So I have no freaking clue. That got me nowhere, except maybe pissing this guy off a little bit. So, yeah. Well, but anyway, my quest to find out about Versus 13 is, like, left me so daunted. No one talks about it. The game was announced to be part of this, you know, Fabula Nova Crystallis trilogy. You know, we saw these awesome previews that it was going to be like a darker Final Fantasy 13 in the same world with this black-haired character. It was going to have more action RPG combat, and it was supposedly beautiful. Everyone that saw clips of it in those like behind-the-scenes sessions that Square holds at E3, etc., looked awesome, and then it just disappeared. It's off the freaking map. I mean, what? Well, WTF?
Wait, that's in the same world as 13?
No, it's
thought
not.
It was.
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted that.
No, it's similar elements.
Yeah, it's
like
similar
Falcian
elements.
Like Falcian stuff, but it's not the same world.
All right.
It's sort of like, you know, with Final Fantasy Tactics and Final Fantasy Tactics Advance and Vagrant Story are all in a place they could call the same world. They're called Evolice in all of them, but it's not the same world itself.
Yeah.
I think that's where they're going for with what that is.
Okay, well, regardless, it has the same elements, Falci, et cetera. Okay.
I mean, they're coming out. Is there Type Zero's news? Out, so in Japan.
Is that going to be localized? Do we know?
I doubt it.
It might. I'd play it if it did. So.
Yeah, me too.
It was a PSP release, was it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I doubt it.
I don't doubt it. I think, I don't know. They still have
maybe
PSP
downloadable
games,
as like that's the, what I mean. The Vita, but, you know.
It's a lot of localization for probably minimal return, but.
If you are listening to this and have any control over it, we would love to have it over here.
yes, absolutely.
The only other thing I've been
playing...
For
all the Japanese Square developers listening to our podcast.
the only other thing I've been playing was the demo for my most... Currently, the most excited I am for a game
and
right now.
And this blows my mind. Like, he just came up to me blindly one day and he was like, dude, I'm more excited about this than any other game. And then he talks about...
The new SSX game that's coming out. And I have no interest in most sports games, but I loved snowboarding games.
1080.
On the GameCube. Yeah, 1080 Avalanche on the GameCube, the SSX games on PS2. I loved them.
Did you ever
play
1080 on 64?
I didn't play 1080
on 64. Oh, that was my passion.
But I've always loved that genre because there's a sense of speed to it. I also played the Tony Hawk games back when they were fun to play. I like the boarding. I like the speed to it. And the demo for SSX has me even more excited for it to come out than anything because it's a fun system. It's complicated enough so that mastering it will take some time and take skill. It's not just going down, like straight down a mountain. There's a fun combo system, the speeding, the grinding, the death-defying tricks.
Are you as excited about it as you were?
Yeah. I am. I mean, I got a little sidetracked from it when I decided I wanted to get a Vita, and I got excited about that. But playing the game and just seeing how much there is to do in it, and I'm just really excited for it. I mean, there's over 150 drops across the nine different locations to go through. It's just a fun game.
But I mean, is it everything like gameplay-wise? I mean, in a game like that, gameplay rules. I mean, that's all that matters is how, you know, viscerally fun it is to push the buttons and see the reaction on the screen. I mean, you don't have a story. If you do, it's, you know, whatever. So what you got to have is like tight mechanics.
I'd say it has it. And it's similar to Skate, if you ever played that. I mean, it's not as complex as Skate because Skate was for me.
I thought SSX was the opposite of that, where Skate was like a realistic experience.
Well, it's not realistic. It's got the similar where to do tricks, you do different combos on the second stick.
On the sticks. Got it.
It determines which way you grab your board, which way you know twist and stuff like that, and then you can spin. So the combo system really works fun. It's still over the top. When you enter tricky mode, you can do things that you physically can't on a real snowboard, which is fun. I mean, that's half the fun of the game.
That's like a classic mode they've always had, right?
Yeah. There's stuff, the deadly descents that are going to be in it are going to be seem like they'll be fun.
That's that really colorful thing they do where it has like What do people who trick out their cars have underneath the car? It glows.
Oh,
decals.
No, it glows, man. fluorescent lights and like fluorescent tubes, ground lighting or whatever. Doesn't it have like fluorescent glowing like lights on the tracks?
Yeah, it has things like that.
Okay,
but the deadly descents are things like you know, going through where you can't go into the shadows or you'll start to freeze, or having huge gaps that you have to use the flight suit to get over. It's just cool things like that that really seem fun.
It sounds like a challenge mode.
Yeah, they're essentially survival challenge modes. And it just seems like a really fun game. It's a game I've been looking forward to for a while, and just I'm going to probably be able to talk about it a lot whenever it finally comes out and I get to play it. So that's what I've been playing, mostly.
On that note, Tim, why don't you take it away with what you've been playing?
Well, I've not been playing that much lately because, little notes to many people, the PlayStation 3 also gets a red ring of death, except it's called the little yellow light of death.
It happened to me too, Tim.
And that happened to my PlayStation. So I was playing some Soul Calibur 5 for a bit, you know, still trying to get into it, you know, not so much happening. I like it, but I'm not blown away. And it just kind of happened one day, and I was like, what the hell is this?
So how does it happen when it hits you?
Well,
give us a blow-by-blow.
Apparently, I was looking online about what exactly happens, and this also happens with the 360, which also calls the Red Ring of Death. So I found this interesting. They always say it's an overheating issue, and while that's correct, what happens is it overheats, and the solder that keeps wires together melts and then reforms separated. So it's not that anything is, like, burned and gone away or anything like that, as much as it is something's no longer connected so the system can't row. And that's why they tell you to use the blow dryer, because the blow dryer will melt the solder and get it connected back up. But yeah, so if you ever heard like the thing with the towels either as well, yeah. Same sort of stuff. Well, anyway, so with all that happening, I have not been able to play that much with it, but I've been trying to find a new way to get a PS3, but PS3s are expensive to repair. And so I'll just buy a new one because it's not that much more.
Yeah. Was yours? Oh, you know what?
What?
Yours was backwards compatible.
Yeah, it was an old school backwards compatible one, which I'm going to miss. And, you know, I'm thinking of getting it repaired and buying a new one and then trying to sell the one that I have now on eBay. Trying to get some money off of it.
Like, probably make
a profit.
You definitely could. People will pay like upwards of $600 for those backwards compatible ones. In fact, I actually, when mine yellow ringed or yellow lighted, I called Sony and they were willing to replace it, but I had the 20 gig backwards compatible. So I was in a dilemma because I never had enough space with the 20 gig. It was the only one they had at Walmart, like right after launch. So that's all I had to get the 20 instead of the 60, but I never had enough space. So my dilemma was, do I send in and get this one fixed and only have 20 gigs still? Or they were willing to, like, for a $50 upcharge, give me like a brand new slim with 120 gig hard drive and all this like bells and whistles, but it wouldn't have backwards compatibility anymore. So I opted for that. But I don't know. I always kind of regretted it.
That was the choice I had to make too. I was like, which one am I going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think I'm probably just going to go with the new system, but it's sad to see it go. And you know,
well, you're not going to throw it in the trash can. I mean, you know.
No, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. It'll probably sit there for a while until I make a decision with it. Yeah. The worst part about it, though, is there's a disc currently inside of it that I can't get out.
It's
the first season, second disc of The West Wing.
Oh.
And so.
Aaron Sorkin would be pissed.
I'd be bummed.
Yeah. Aaron Sorkin is bummed right now.
And so we'll see what happens. We'll try to get it out.
About it.
But, yeah.
Okay, and anything else?
No, that's really it. I mean, you can't play a non-working system.
Okay. All right. Well, I will take over then. I played and finished Resident Evil Revelations for 3DS and loved it.
You were kind of mellow on it last time. So, yep. So what changed in the experience that got you excited for it?
A couple things. One, and Jordan laughed about this when I told him, but I figured out that you can switch from first-person shooting controls to over-the-shoulder, which is what made Resident Evil 4 so awesome, is that, you know, it let you do over the shoulder and what this gives you, and especially on a small screen like the 3DS's, the big problem I was having is there'd be a big disconnect when I'd click into, you know, pull up my gun, you know, with the left trigger, you pull up your gun, and then like all of a sudden, because it's such a small screen, you don't have a lot of points of
reference.
Thank you. Yeah. To know where you are. So it was very difficult when you switch between the modes. You know, you're just like, where's the monster now? And where am I now? And proportionately, things were, you know, where in space is everything is a lot harder on a smaller screen. It's something you realize when they try to shoehorn a big game like this onto a small system is, you know, how much a game like Resident Evil is, at least in that kind of incarnation, is designed for a home console experience. It's much improved when I switched this, which I only got like the last third of the game to play that way, unfortunately. Yeah. But the thing about it is that when you can see your character and the enemy, your perspective just like it's back. I don't know why that's not the default. I don't know why.
Yeah, see, the only reason I laughed at you is because that was kind of the first thing I did was fiddle with.
I know.
When I played the demo,
I know.
I did that. So I was just it astounded me that you'd suffered through so much of the game like that.
Astounding. Haha. Yeah. I'm a dumbass.
I'm sorry, man.
Yeah. All right. You're forgiven, man. It's okay. But anyway, what makes the game really good is it has a really good story. I'm a sucker, and I talk about this all the time for twists and turns and surprises in all of my media. I read detective fiction. I watch detective movies. I import them from freaking England just because I want a good whodunit. I love a cast of characters, getting to know them, and then finding out that one of them has been betraying us all along. To me, that kind of story just resonates. I love that. In life, people do have secret agendas, and that isn't even the reason. I just like a surprise, pure and simple. And so this game has tons of them. Even with a small cast, there's like 5 or 6 people in the whole game. And even with that small, well, maybe 8. And even with that small cast, it really surprises you as to who's up to what, and maybe not, but even, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? No, I'm saying you may not be surprised. I was to some extent, but now looking back, you know, maybe I should have known about one of them, but
maybe the guy with the big gun trying to kill me is trying to kill me.
No, actually, that's just the thing with Resident Evil. He's probably not. You know what I mean? That guy's probably not trying to kill you. In fact, it does happen. A guy pulls a gun on you and isn't trying to kill you. But anyway, one of those you shouldn't be here moments. You know what I mean? But anyway, the game is overall really fun. It's your $40 worth. It really is. It's long. I think I put like 20 some hours in on it. And then raid mode is fun too. I haven't played too much of raid mode, but it's overall a really good game, a really fun package. For me, a lot of games come down to this. I play through Uncharted is a great example of this, like 1, 2, and 3. I play the game all the way through, and right in like the last third of the game, I start loving it. I start, and this happens with a lot of games, even the best games, is like I've really got a handle on the mechanics. I'm starting to really enjoy this game and know my way around and like get that feeling like I talk about, you know, like that like it's sort of like an ecstatic feeling of playing the game. You just want to get home and play it, and it makes you feel good to play it. You get in this like zone with a game, and it often happens to me in the last third, and that's unfortunate because once I get into the groove, the game's over. And that is somewhat the case with this game too. For the first two thirds, and it may have been switching the controls, but by that last third, I was just like totally hooked and totally enjoying it, but then it was downhill from there as far as time wise.
I think it's interesting to see something as little as like switching the controls can do stuff there. Because I, for one, think first-person shooter games, you never relate with the character because you never see the character. You always just see your hands or their hands.
Yeah.
Well, with the third person, you're seeing the character. So then you can finally associate with another person, you know? It doesn't feel like it's just you doing it the whole time. It's like, oh, here's this person who I'm now experiencing it with. And so I think it really makes a story a lot better with it a lot of times.
It was one of the revelations, no pun intended, of Resident Evil 4, was that over-the-shoulder view, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Yeah.
I didn't mean, yeah.
I thought you were saying it was one of revelations of revelations, and I was like, wow, that's not that impressive thing.
No, that's not what I meant.
Yeah. Hey, look, you can play like this now.
Yeah, exactly. And then the Circle Pad Pro is pretty important, I'd say. I tried playing a little without it, and, you know, for me, it's you know, that game basically costs $60 right now. You need that.
It's an investment.
Yeah, we'll see down the line if there's anything other than Snake Eater and left-handed play on Kid Icarus.
And Kingdom Hearts. That's
kind of... Dream Drop. Yeah, I'm all about it. Anyway, moving on, I played a couple demos. The Darkness 2 demo. That demo is pretty fun. I've actually red-boxed the game and haven't had a chance to sit down and play it yet, the full game. But it's got this thing called quad wielding. It's like its gimmick. And that means that, you know, you have 2 bumpers on your Xbox controller and 2 triggers. So the 2 triggers control 2 guns if you have 2 guns picked up. And then the 2 bumpers are your demon arms. One of them grabs, one of them throws. Or one of them slashes, one of them grabs and throws. So it's kind of fun. It's definitely a new take on things. You know what it's like a cross between? It's a cross between the old Darkness, but better and more refined and polished.
It would have to be.
Yeah. And Bulletstorm. It's a lot like Bulletstorm. In that you have in Bulletstorm you have that like energy lasso where you grab things. Well, in this you have a demon arm. In Bulletstorm you have skill shots where you're lining up like like, you know, the way you kill your enemies matters, and the, you know, you get points for them, and then those points allow you to do upgrades. So it's really a cross between, you know, a darkness game and Bulletstorm. So, and Bulletstorm was cool. Did you guys like that game?
I didn't play it. I had fun with it, but it was something, you know, like, I felt that after I played like 6 hours, I was like, I'm done. I don't care about the storyline, and I feel I've done as much as I want to do in this game.
Yeah, on Bulletstorm, I only ever played the demo, and I was never really impressed with what I saw there, so I never bothered to go out and even Redbox it or anything like that.
Well, let me ask you this, since you're talking, Adam. Next thing I was going to say I played is the Dun-Dun Mass Effect 3 demo.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I've been doing a lot of Mass Effect 2 recently, just trying to get several different Shepherds set up for Mass Effect 3.
That is dedicated.
I'll tell you this story.
Yeah.
I was at my house down in Charlotte, and we don't have internet right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan texted me and told me that the Mass 3 demo had dropped. And
what did you do, dude?
Well, my buddy, my roommate, has a phone that can be used as a Wi-Fi hotspot. So
you tethered.
I jumped up from my seat. I shouted to him as I was running into my room, Wi-Fi me real quick. And I ran in there and I got the demo on the off of the Wi-Fi hotspot, and man, it is beautiful.
And how long did it take?
Yeah, how long was that download?
Oh, it took forever, but it was worth it. I mean,
so talk about the demo, man. Give us the play-by-play.
Well, it starts off on Earth. You take control of a Shepherd. You can actually, which is really cool for a demo to do.
Yeah.
You can make your own Shepherd in the demo.
There's choices about what happened to people like Ashley and Kaiden.
Yep, and you can make your Shepherd's psychological profile be affected so that you've experienced numerous deaths. But you start off and you're going through the council, talking with them, and you find out that as a result of two, you've been demoted, and you're now like on a probation with the Alliance.
Is that because you were like hanging with Cerberus? Is that why?
Well, I don't want to get into too many spoilers,
okay,
because Jordan still hasn't played the last any of the DLC, but especially the last bit.
Oh, right, Arrival.
But I think it had something to do with the consequences from Arrival.
You know, I played Arrival. I barely remember it, though. But we'll talk about it. We'll talk about it next podcast.
But all of a sudden, you're talking to them, and the Reapers show up on Earth. And it is really impactful. There's this one really touching scene with a kid. And the kid, it's an event.
Sounded really bad, dude.
Well, he's hiding in an air vent or something.
A touching scene with a kid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, not that kind of touch.
Let's take it out of context here. It'd be really gross. Go ahead.
But Shepherd goes up to the kid and, you know, you're like, come with me, I can help you. And the kid says,
is that what it was like?
No, nobody can help me right now. And you look away and the kid goes.
I remember this now.
And then at the end of that section of the demo, the kid comes back and you see him hop onto a shuttle just as another Reaper is coming up to you. And as that shuttle is taking off, it gets lasered by the Reaper.
Heartbreak.
It really is. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this.
And what's really great about it is right after that, they scroll to Shepard's face, and like you can just see he's seething with anger. And I know Jordan always says that like he feels like he's totally unexpressive, Shepard. But
to be fair, male Shepard is a pill in Mass Effect 1 and 2 and boring, and the guy who delivers his line sounds like he doesn't care. But I did see, it felt like he was putting more emotion into it. It did. When I played Mass Effect,
I think
3.
You need to play FemShep, dude.
Oh, FemShep is the way to go always. I have my, female Paragon FemShep, and, both of my renegades are males.
Well, let's talk about classes real quick for a second. What class did you play?
With my Paragon, I took her through as a Vanguard.
Vanguard's my class.
Yeah.
I love charging. Love it.
It's
and
an amazing
in this game
ability.
With melee, that's another thing that we should mention, that Mass 3 has a new newfound emphasis on melee.
Yeah. And I didn't go through any sequences where I used the Omniblade sword. I don't know if it's
No, it's
usable.
Not in it.
Okay.
It's not in it.
But yeah, the melee does look a little bit more impressive in 3 than it did.
Well,
it has
like a charge attack now.
Yes.
Which makes it pretty awesome. So you can actually hold down, you know, X or whatever the button is, and then like charge it up, and it does this electric blast where you're basically all the Mass Effect field from your body just like smashes into this dude. And there's a lot of another thing that's really cool about this game is a lot of the powers now are like risk reward powers. In that you can in one class or I think in Vanguard you could you can like send off this really powerful Nova Blast off of your body, but it's at the cost of your shields.
Yeah,
so that's really cool. I mean, that kind of gameplay where you're gambling is awesome. Anyway, no. Go ahead, tell me more about what you thought.
Oh, I just loved it overall. It was a great game. It was a great demo, rather.
Now, what do we have? A couple weeks? No, about a week till it comes out.
A week from Tuesday. Yep.
Oh my God, it's going to be freaking amazing.
By the time this drops, it'll probably be here.
Yeah, that's exciting. Jordan, you played it too, right?
Yeah, it was Mass Effect, and you know, this is why Adam is here, because he can get excited about Mass Effect Rich.
Oh man, you're killing me.
Like, I can't, and I don't think Tim can either, so.
Oh, Tim's on this boat too.
I have yet to play Mass Effect games, because, you know, the first one was for the 360, and then, you know, the second one was mostly pretty much entirely for the 360 until later, and so it's just something I never really got into, and I'm just like, I'm sure I'd like it, but I'm just not really that looking forward to it, honestly.
But I did enjoy the demo. I'll say that. I just, it's not going to be a day one purchase for me, because I don't really care that much about Mass Effect.
Wow.
Well, I guess I'll have to have Rich do the multiplayer with me until we can get you with us then.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in, dude. It's on. It's totally on, man. Oh, if you get internet.
Oh, I'm going to have it by then. Okay. I'm going to make sure. I have internet coming on next week.
Good.
And I'm going to have gold renewed by then.
Dude, we're on. It's
and
on.
And he's stealing the thing for the Wi-Fi hotspot.
We are like totally, on a recording related note, we're like totally blowing out the microphones here, man. So we got to be a little careful.
If that's me, I'm apologize.
It's all of us, dude. We're
having a good time.
Enthusiasm's a good thing, dude. All right. While we're talking to you, Adam, let's talk a little bit about, we're going to do this like a lightning round. Let's talk a little bit about the last, three games that got you really excited and why.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start off with the least excited, which would be Catherine. That came out a long time ago.
Yeah.
And, it's actually a game that Jordan here got me into.
You just played it recently though, right?
Yes. I have this thing. I don't typically like puzzle games. But Jordan told me to play the demo for it, and I absolutely loved it. I fell in love with the choices.
I'm with you, Adam. I don't really like puzzle games either, and I like that game.
Okay, well, cool. I'm glad I'm not the only one who got that effect from it.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay.
Next up would have been Batman Arkham City.
Okay.
One of the big titles from last year, and that, it's like everybody else says, it's phenomenal.
Tell me why you think so, because I'm a little mixed on it.
No one here was that excited when we did our Game of the Year show, so maybe get some energy out there for it from us.
Well, I guess none of you just like being Batman then, because
well, no, Rich and I both loved Arkham Asylum.
Arkham Asylum is like a 9.5 game.
To me, it felt like there was something lost when they went to Arkham City, and it didn't feel quite as much like being Batman. It was still a fun, competent game, but it didn't feel like being Batman as much.
And the interiors were busted. All the interior levels were like nowhere near as cool as the interiors were in the game that relied so much more heavily on interiors. You know what I mean?
I don't recall exactly what you mean, because it has been a while.
When you're inside. Like, you know, anytime you're inside, like, a place, like when the Joker was leading you around by the nose the whole time, and you're inside all these different, you know, cavernous buildings, and they have multiple floors, and then there'll be Joker teeth in this weird little attic room you have to find. Does that jog your memory a little? How fun that was?
Yeah.
And this one just, you know, for all the expansiveness and the open world that it added, I think it really detracted in that. And also, they also threw in, like, the kitchen sink, man. I mean, like, every rogue that's ever appeared in a game and every rogue's, like, sister, brother, and stepmom were in this freaking game.
Well, the thing you got to remember about this game, though, is that this is an entire section of Gotham City that's been cordoned off and dedicated to keeping Batman's rogues in here.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for the context of that. I liked seeing people like Hush in there. I'm still not sure exactly why Azrael was in there, because he's a hero, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, something.
But, it's kind of antsy hero.
People like Ra's al Ghul, who I really was pulling for to make an appearance in Arkham Asylum. I was happy to see him in here. So I don't know. I really loved it.
Awesome. Okay.
Adam's also a Batman super fan, so I think he was able to get into geek out over it a little more than someone others.
If it had been the first one I played, I probably would have had the same experience. Unfortunately, I just had. I think I was a victim of extremely high expectations, which happens.
Yeah, it does.
Number three, man.
Number three is last year's biggest title for me, AAA. Elder Scrolls V Skyrim.
All right.
I think I've logged over 150 hours into
Have
that
you
right
really?
Now. Yeah, it's just such an immersive world.
Okay.
I play typically a thief rogue type character. I depend a lot on my bow, which is so much improved from the last Oblivion. And I can't express enough how much I love that game.
Tell me what you think of the new magic system and the new the way that perks are handled.
Oh, I love the perk tree.
You see, to me, it was a little daunting. I was like, wow, there's a million perks that I'll never get.
Yeah, and it really can be. Going up to the constellation area the first time and seeing them all, you really have to take time and, well, I took time and mapped out what end perks I wanted so that I could best get there without wasting any on other stuff that would be kind of cool, but I wouldn't use as much.
Yeah.
One of the big ones I picked out was to get the dragon smithing armor for the smithing perk tree. You have to get 100 in your smithing skill to get that, and once you finally are able to create your own dragon armor, it really is worth it.
What are the benefits?
Oh, it's just the best suit of armor that you can get in the game. It has the highest defense rate, especially once you improve upon the base armor. It has both a light armor and a heavy armor set for depending on which kind of character you want to play. It's the highest defense. It doesn't do anything enhancing to you.
Right.
But
you look badass too, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Awesome. And you had an honorable mention of Saints Row the Third?
Yes, Saints Row the Third. It's another game that Jordan here got me into.
He got me into it too.
Yeah, because
Saints Row 2 is one of the best games of this generation.
It is really awesome. But here's the thing, when I saw Saints Row 2, I was just like, that is so like thug life. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to touch that. And then and then when you start playing it, I don't know, it grabs you.
Well, I think that I had a bad feeling from the first Saints Row game because I heard so many negative things about that one.
That it was just a clone of GTA, right?
That I never wanted to play it. And it turns out once I played 2 and 3, I skipped over 1, but once I played 2 and 3 and tried to go back to a game like GTA 4, I didn't like GTA 4 nearly
as much. You felt limited, right?
I did, yeah.
Right. Got it. Well, that should give us a little sense of what your tastes are going forward. And we'll hear more from you throughout the podcast. Awesome. Now we're moving on to news. And starting out, we're going to talk about some games that have just been announced that are going to be localized in the U.S. Wait, Jordan is dying to say something.
Fantastic couple of days announcement-wise because these are all announcements from the past week.
Yeah.
And, I mean, some of these I saw within this, like, one news post apart. Bam, announcement. It's just been great. And these are games I'm excited about.
Yeah, this is like particularly weighted towards Jordan's tastes, although I'm very excited about some of it too. Most notably, the last story. We already got the great news that I think we mentioned recently that Xenoblade Chronicles probably due much in part to Project Rainfall.
Yeah, they've been
they've been pushing
trucking
all those really, really well.
Yeah, and now there's just one more after this.
It goes to show what a petition can do to the game industry. Last episode, we were talking about the games by the Psychonauts dude, Tim Schafer. Yeah. and how the internet is able to fund those through
Kickstarter.
Through Kickstarter, and how the impact that gamers are having in that regard. And now we're seeing that the impact that gamers can have as far as getting a game localized. Because it's not a matter of, I mean, all of us would probably be willing to, the hardcores like us would probably be willing to import something like Xenoblade here, but because of region locking, I mean, you'd have to buy a Wii. And check this out. I actually ordered Xenoblade Chronicles from Europe, got a copy and it was like $80. And then I was like, okay, now all I got to do is get the European Wii. I'm thinking maybe I'll spend 50 on it or something. I was even willing to spend like 80 because, pounds are more than dollars, and it just was a lot or something. It was $80 or $100. I'm trying to order it, and Amazon won't even let you. You're not even allowed to ship video game stuff. So, I mean, you'd have to find somebody willing to ship it to you from England. I mean, it's literally almost impossible. And right around there, Jordan told me the news that it was going to be localized. So we're really excited about that. And now the last story, the second Project Rainfall game.
And this one's not coming through Nintendo of America like Xenoblade. It's coming from Exceed game. And they'll publish anything from Japan.
They're stepping up their game. Half the time.
So, and sometimes it's great games. Sometimes they're pretty
weird. Yeah.
But you got to love publishers like that who are willing to bring stuff over.
You totally do, because you know these are not decisions that are million-dollar decisions for them. As far as making millions, you know they're not going to make millions of dollars on Xenoblade here. But what they are doing is they might make some profit. I'm hoping all of us will band together and pick these games up so that this continues. But the point is that they're doing us a huge service that we're getting these games finally. Basically righting a wrong, man. We were getting no RPGs over here.
I think it's so weird just to look at sort of the gaming market now and like how much it's shifted in the past 5 years, you know? Because like back in the day, there would be no chance that that game would have not shipped, because that would have been your core audience. But so much of the core audience has changed lately to where it's just like you still got those people who still love those games, but they're really a small minority now.
Yeah, and I think that American companies have helped to break the stigma of RPGs, because you've got companies like BioWare, Bethesda, and Blizzard who are putting out RPG, at least RPG-style games, if not straight-out Japanese RPG. And that might help introduce some people into those cult classics, so to speak.
But the problem is with a lot of those games that, you know, everyone says, and it's very true, that American RPGs are like Western RPGs are a totally different ballpark.
Yeah.
They're usually open world. They're usually a lot more about customization of your character and choice, whereas the Japanese games are much more about story and, you know, just a much more funneled, focused experience. So a lot of times people will go from an American RPG and pick up like Final Fantasy and be like, what the fuck? I can't do shit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and that's kind of the interesting thing with Xenoblade and The Last Story, because they're both, they kind of break the JRPG mold in a lot of ways.
Right.
Xenoblade is very open world with its expansive two struggling giants interlocked in an infinite fight.
That's freaking awesome.
And then I was reading about The Last Story, and it's got a lot of, it doesn't have generic barriers. Like there's not, if there's a little fence in the road, it's not going to stop you. You can get over it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, so these games are clearly taking notes. And I think those are the developers we need to see localized, the developers who are willing to take chances with their properties.
And also, it's got a really interesting battle system I was reading about, which sounds really interesting. And also, what's awesome about it is that it has this much different than Final Fantasy XIII 2, a nice large cast of characters. I think there's like 8 main characters or something.
It's also pretty short too.
Like 20 some hours, yeah. I've heard that. But then it has all this multiplayer content that I'll never play. But
so that leaves Pandora's Tower as the only option.
What is that?
It's one I don't really care about.
What is it?
No, just of the three, I don't really remember much about it from my reading about it. I just know it is the one that's gotten rated pretty low from Famitsu. It's not necessarily, I mean,
Xenoblade was like a 38.
Yeah, Xenoblade and Last Story have both been critically acclaimed.
Like near perfect scores from Famitsu, which if you don't know, is the Japanese, top tier. I guess what Game Informer is here now, Famitsu is there.
But I mean, that said, if it does come out, I think that's a good thing too. I just think, you know, more games is never a bad thing. And I think if people are going to play them, then they should be here, especially since the Wii is nothing right now.
We need hardcore games. Go ahead, Tim, sorry.
That's what amazed me the most about it. It's just like, oh, we're not going to release these games, and we're not going to release anything else either. So it's just like, why the hell would you not release it? It's not like it's competing Rhythm Heaven against anything.
I mean, it's not even like they need to localize them. These are all being localized for Europe. So Pandora's Tower is being localized for Europe. I wouldn't be surprised if we get that one too now.
Because
Operation Rainfall is doing their job.
That's the thing. It's just like, I mean, maybe if it's straight from England and has been localized to America, maybe they have slightly English phrases that you may not get, but it's just like, that's totally easy to do from there.
Yeah, no problem there. I mean, localizations 9 times out of 10 have odd colloquial expressions we don't understand anyway, or you know, whatever. So that's a side effect of the process. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna let you talk about these next two announcements.
All right,
Jordan, because these are like right up your freaking alley.
The first one I'll do quick, just because I'll be talking about this game a lot next week. But the follow-up to 999, which was a surprisingly well received and sold great hit here.
Visual novel.
Visual novel for the DS.
Brilliant.
Its follow-up, which is going to be released on the 3DS and the Vita, just came out in Japan, and it has been announced that it will be localized this fall.
Wait a second. It's out?
Yeah, in Japan.
Oh my God, it was released?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant like it was announced or something.
No, no, it's announced for localization this week.
Wait, wait, wait. It's on Vita now?
I think it's going to be on Vita. Oh, okay. It's on DS.
I was
going to
say.
It's on 3DS.
Okay.
But the Vita version is coming, and I think it'll launch simultaneously here.
Here, okay. I was going to say, if it's already on Vita in Japan, that blows my freaking gourd.
I love 999. It's, well, I'll talk about it more. Like I said, we're going to be doing our memories of DS and PSP next week, and I will be talking about 999, to say the least. But the fact that this sequel's coming, I think, you know, it's going to be another well-written, awesome mystery.
Have you heard of, have you heard any buzz? I mean, reviews or anything yet?
I haven't heard any of those, but I have full faith in it, honestly.
Oh, yeah. That guy's, like, the best.
Yeah. The other announcement, which was a game that I had less faith was going to come out, was Persona 4 Arena.
What is that?
Well, it is based on Persona 4, the Shin Megami game, which is my favorite RPG of all time, is Persona 4. And so this is a fighting game that features the characters of Persona 4. And
so it's Dissidia?
No, it's not Dissidia. It's BlazBlue, if it's anything.
Yeah,
because it's from Arc System Works.
Oh, so it's like made by a reputable fighting company.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fighting game featuring my favorite RPG cast made by the makers of my favorite fighting game.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
It's Christmas.
I don't care what
Jordan.
The reviews say. I'm buying that, and I'm gonna try it because I don't. I mean, just I'm. When it was announced, I was going, "Oh man, I want to play that," and it's probably never gonna get released here. But
yeah,
thankfully it is, and I'm just jazzed.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, Persona 4 was like before Catherine, like one of the best selling games to come here in a long time from Japan, like RPGs that kind of style. As far as what's that company?
Atlas.
Yeah, Atlas. Like, that was the first big success story from Atlas to localized here. You know, as far as huge success, I know Persona 3 did well also, but Persona 4 was like, did really well. And then Catherine did 500,000.
Yeah.
At least that's my understanding.
But it's still a very, I mean, it's kind of like Professor Layton versus Ace Attorney. Tim said this in the past. You got to be a specific
gamer to buy it.
And yeah. I'm that gamer, so I'm excited.
Yeah, that's true. You're like, yeah, that demographic is like, if you look at the Venn diagram, all three circles cross and there's Jordan right in the freaking middle.
It's just the Jordan demographic. Like, just one guy there.
Yeah.
But hey, I'll buy it.
They're going to sell one copy. Okay, a little Kojima news. This is a little bit out of left field for me because I hadn't actually heard about this. But Hideo Kojima has clarified Project Ogre. Which will be, quote, an open world game with 100 plus hours of content and also a very subdued experience. And that a lot of people were wondering if Project Ogre was like Project, I guess Rainfall does have a real meaning, but Project Dolphin or something with Nintendo, where the word doesn't actually mean anything. It's just a project name. But in this case, there will actually be ogres. But in because it's translated from Japanese, ogre there, the word for ogre kind of means devil or demon, so it could have to do with devils and demons rather than an ogre like out of Warhammer or something.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you guys think of this news?
I'm a big fan of Kojima. I didn't like Castlevania: Lord of Shadows that much.
No.
It was
how much do, I mean, we don't even
yeah.
know how much of a hand
yeah, I don't
he
know
really
how much
had,
that,
had
but
that.
You know,
I mean that's the thing. I think, you know, if this were a Metal Gear announcement, you'd know Kojima's in it.
Yeah.
But I think it is kind of that question where yeah they hyped up his name for Castlevania, but that game was, I mean,
it isn't horrible.
It
was just so hard to play.
It just was bland.
It's so boring, and it's so long. It's intrepid.
What kills me is the pacing of that game, where it's just like you're going from level to level, but before you go to level, it's like, oh, you jump. Oh, now you go back to the world map. Now you wait 30 seconds. You go to this new map. Oh, now you finished your jump, and it's just like you can't feel that you're immersed in that, you know? You can't feel that you're exploring a world or that you're a part of that story when it's just such huge gaps all the time and all that sort of things. And that killed the game for me.
So many times I was like, I want to play it. I need to play it. I want to get further. I've heard the ending's awesome, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
And
it's like I dreaded it.
So I think that might have hurt my it made me back off the hype machine for him as much. Mm-hmm. Because in the past, if you heard his name, you were always probably going to get a really good game.
Yeah.
So again, if this were a Metal Gear title, sure. But I'm, you know, this is a wait and see type of thing. I'm not going to get excited like I might have for Castlevania.
You know what I wish they would do? I wish they would localize Snatcher and Police Knots. Why can't they do that? Those are those two Hideo Kojima, like, visual novel type games.
Well, Snatcher was on the Sega CD, so you could get it.
Yeah, but it's really, you're right, you're right. But, I mean, what I should have said is I wish they would put on, like, XBLA, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
For, like, $10 or something. Boy, would that be awesome. And, you know, they'd sell so many copies. Why not do it?
Well, I mean, we can't get an HD Psychonauts on the XBLA, so, I mean, that's...
What's that reason? I
don't know. It just hasn't happened.
Oh, I see. I thought you were saying that it was like discussed and shot down or something.
Yeah. I mean, it's just there's a lot of games that we'd probably like to see.
I'm still waiting for Toe Jam and Earl to be brought to the XBLA.
Was announced.
Isn't it on Wii?
Yeah, it's on Wii. But it was announced for the Xbox.
Yeah, you're right. No one cares about it.
Yeah. When did that happen?
The Wii or the announcement?
The announcement.
Jordan a while ago. A couple of years.
Oh, well.
I mean...
It still hasn't happened.
Yeah, no, I know. That's what I'm saying.
Final Fantasy 13 versus 13 morning. I'm so pissed. Okay. Another thing. This is a little bit, for all the great news lately, this is a little bit of potentially unpleasant news about the Xbox, Xbox 720 or the sequel to Xbox. You brought us this story, Jordan, so tell me a little more about it. Oh, no, you did. You did, Adam. tell us about it, Adam.
I have heard rumors that for the Xbox 360 runner-up, the games for it will be console-specific. So basically, you get your game, you plug in an activation code, and your game has to stay with that console, basically eliminating trade-ins.
That's so like the DRM they have for PC games.
And not just trade-ins, you know, lending to your friend. Here's an awesome game.
I don't believe it.
Oh,
it's suicide, you know?
It really
that's why I don't
be.
Think it's true. I mean, because that's so obviously dumb. I mean, they could try to be subtle with it. Like, I'm thinking there was that one. I think it might be Revelations where you can't delete your save. So if you ever bought a trade in, then your thing. But, I mean, that sounds like suicide because then
It was Mercenaries 3D.
Yeah, that was Mercenaries.
Maybe an extract. I mean, if every game had an activation code, I could maybe understand that. Mm-hmm. But it just got blown out of proportion. I mean, they'll do something because it's a continuing fight against the pre-owned market.
The only way I could see them doing that is if they were going more downloadable, which I think in the future is going to happen. And so maybe that was what they would be anticipating is we're going to be fully downloadable system. And in that sort of situation, you wouldn't need the activation codes.
Yeah.
But, you know, if that was the case, I wouldn't mind.
Well,
that
sure.
So
that,
much,
I
but,
mean, that's the decision you make when you decide to buy something digitally exclusively.
Yeah.
Is that I am going to be limited to playing this game on this console, at least with this profile, period.
Yeah.
That's the thing that we're realizing, you know, with the Vita, which we're about to segue into, is that, you know, if you buy anything on the Vita, you know, you're going to own it forever on the Vita. And that's that. So. So anyway, needless to say, that would be terrible. Didn't you say, Jordan, that if this actually happened, you might actually consider the next
thing? If that were to happen, I'll put it this way. If they were going to do something like this, it'd have to be all systems. I mean, because if the Xbox did it and PS3 or the PlayStation 4 or the Wii U didn't, Xbox would kill themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, Xbox fans, or at least I would. I would abandon ship.
I'll tell you what would kill them is GameStop. I mean, GameStop is fighting to keep used games alive. That's where they make 95% of their profit. I mean, I don't know about that statistic, but I do know that, you know, they make all their money. The new games, they make very little profit.
Yeah, and you've already got companies like EA throwing in codes that ship only with new games.
Right.
So that you get special bonuses.
For the online.
Yeah, the online, the activation. The Cerberus Pass is one of them.
At least they give you some foo-foo goodness with the Cerberus.
Oh, yeah.
That's becoming pretty standard, though. I mean, I know most companies are doing that
now. EA, it's on every game now.
Yeah, I know, like, Mortal Kombat did that as well. Assassin's Creed Revelations does that as well. Mm-hmm. Every EA game. But yeah, that's pretty standard now. I hate that.
Yeah.
When is the new Project Raccoon City coming out? Do you guys remember?
March, I think.
Yeah, it's sometime in March. I don't remember the exact
Are you excited about that, Tim?
Kind of.
Yeah, you love Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Left 4 Dead, and it reminds me a lot of Left 4 Dead. But my favorite thing in Left 4 Dead is versus mode. and I don't know if there's going to be a competent versus mode within that.
Well, I know the whole game is not going to be as good as Left 4 Dead. I mean, you know, competing with Valve is a losing proposition.
Yeah.
Especially in a genre that they've, you know, single-handedly invented pretty much.
Yeah. But it's, you know, I played a little bit of it when I was at PAX, and I liked it, but I don't think it's something that's going to blow me away, you know?
Yeah.
If I knew some people who were picking it up and I found it cheap, I'd probably pick it up too, you know? But I don't know. It's not a day one purchase.
I'm on that boat. I'll probably play it because I like Resident Evil, but it's sort of the thing where...
Is there going to be any campaign?
There's a campaign.
But again, it's just not necessarily... Of the three Resident Evil games coming out this year, it's at the bottom.
Yeah.
But I think that's reasonable. It's an experiment, and it could go well, it could not.
What do you guys think about this American Nightmares, Alan Wake thing that just got released on as part of this XBLA house party?
I don't know much about it. I know it's supposed to be like, you know, a side story, but...
Well, it's supposedly like based on that whole Bright Falls... Night Springs. Did you play Alan Wake, Tim?
I haven't gotten around to it. Okay. I'm still in my huge pile.
All right.
Adam and I both played it, and
I did too.
Yeah, this is a game that Jordan and I both went through together. Took us, 12 hours to get through the story on Alan Wake, and I'm hearing that with the Alan Wake American Nightmares, if it took you 8 hours to get through Alan Wake, it'll take you 4 or 5 to get through American Nightmares. So it's a good size game,
especially for $10.
Yeah, for 15. But I think, you know, I've heard it's different. I've heard it's a little disjointed from reviews. But it still looks impressive enough that I want to play it.
I just don't love the whole they're cloaked in darkness. You shoot them with light, then you shoot them with gun. Rinse and repeat. I don't know how much. I just didn't enjoy it that much.
I mean, yeah, if you don't like it, that's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think I still might want to play it. The problem I have is nothing's real in that world. That's the way the fiction has been set up. So, like, if you write it, it becomes real, a.k.a. none of it's really real. So to me, I mean, there's no like real enemies, and I don't know. I have trouble caring about anybody involved in that world because in the end, he's the writer. He's going to get out alive, and I don't know. I don't feel any real tension.
Alan
Wake falls flat for me.
That's cool. I mean, it's like that for Mass Effect with me, or it was until I gave it another chance.
Yeah.
But I still think it's a fun game, and I will say that the house party this year actually has games that I think are fun.
I want I Am Alive, dude.
Oh yes.
Yeah, I Am Alive looks awesome. Warp mm-hmm. seems fun. The
Warp
in the past,
does look good. Warp is like
the house party games have kind of been
not as good as Summer of XBLA.
Yeah, compared to Summer of XBLA. So
that they have just the two, right?
What do you mean?
Two promo?
Yeah,
campaigns.
The true promo campaigns. Yeah.
Okay. And what's that? What was the third one? There's a fourth one. There's four.
There's one shooter.
It's like an arena FPS.
Oh, it's one of those things. Yeah, there's like so many of those now. And anyway. All right. On February 22nd, there was a momentous occasion, and it was the release of the PlayStation Vita.
To all the normal people who didn't waste their money on a bigger one.
Right, on the
pre-launch.
And
if you did get the first edition, I do hope you enjoyed the extra week of it. It just seemed, to us, I think it seemed.
Well, you know, I think if it had come with a bigger memory card or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe a game we wanted more, I don't know.
It did come with a huge e-penis, though.
But you know what all Vitas came with? And this is, like, to me, the number one biggest thing, a second analog stick. Oh, my God. It is a world of difference. It is night and day. It is black and white. It is so freaking important. After 8 years or 10 years, whatever the PSP, 8 years of suffering with one freaking nub, 6 years, whatever. Now we finally have two nubs. I mean, whereas the PlayStation Portable was like missing forms of input, this thing is like input overkill, man. You can input in like 80 different ways into the freaking
I'll say
Vita.
This because I've been playing a lot of PSP games. I think the good PSP games worked well without it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But not the ones that try to simulate a true home experience.
Oh, no,
not
necessarily,
right.
No. And I think...
I think Rich's hatred of the PSP controllers is unwarranted. I never had a problem with the PSP controllers, and I think I played the most out of anyone here.
Yeah, you
it.
Probably have.
Yeah, I'm definitely... and I envied the PSP for most of the time because I wanted to play it, but I always would just kind of get caught on the fact that... Meh. Or I kept waiting.
Yeah.
And then eventually they announced the Vita, and I was like, well, I guess I'm not going to get a PSP.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's backtrack a little bit. We've had the Vita for 2.5 days now.
Yeah, we both got the Wi-Fi version.
Right. And I guess let's talk first impressions.
I like it. I mean, that's the simple kind of, it's a really nice system. It's sleek. The screen's great. The touch controls, that's probably my biggest sticking point, but we'll get to that in a bit. I love the second stick. I think that there are still a couple of inputs missing from the PS3 controller, but the touchscreen makes up for that in some cool ways from what I've seen so far. There's a lot going on that makes it just a really fun system to play. I'm digging it. I like the media. It's just a flat proprietary memory card for the games, which is nicer than the UMDs. I've been enjoying it.
I mean, to me, the experience of using it, you know, at first I didn't really like the memory, the bubble system, but you know, that aside, as far as like the menus, but that aside, like the ease of use of this system, the interface is fantastic.
It is
where to close things, you like pull down like the edge of the envelope and like pull it towards you. I mean, it's so intuitive. And you know, the whole, like, it almost sort of steals, like, the Blades concept from Xbox, but in a new way, where you can have, like, multiple things open and that you pull them down and, like, one's in front of the other. And it's cool. I mean, it's just the ease of use of the system. It's just a pleasurable system to use. And like Tim was saying a little before we started recording, one of the things that was great about the PSP, and I didn't play enough PSP to get the value of this, but imagine if you were playing, like, The War of the Lions or Let Us Cling Together, one of these long RPGs, this would have really come in, or Valkyrie Chronicles 2, it would have really come into value, be really valuable, and that is being able to turn off the system and turn it right back on and be in your place.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love the most just about the PSP and the PS Vita as well. It's just, you know, I'm right back where I was.
I think another thing I really like is, and this is a small thing, but obviously, the system has a lot of bells and whistles. They're marketing it pretty hard to the hardcore, but they're also they've added a lot of things that are to pull people in. Mm. But you know, the touch screens work well. I like the front touch screen. I think it works for the things they use it for. The gyroscope controls are much better than the six-axis controller on the PS3 ever were. I feel it's responsive. It works well. There's cool things. Uncharted has, I mean, there's light sensitivity on the back pad so that it allows you to use light to manipulate the games, which isn't something that's done a lot now, but
wait,
it's there.
What?
In Uncharted, like, you'll find documents and you hold it up to a light source to help.
Wait,
uncover.
I thought you were on chapter 5.
I'm on chapter 12, 13 now.
Oh,
I played it more since we talked.
Oh, wait. It. No, it's not the back pad, it's the camera.
Oh, the camera. Okay. What? I mean, the point is it's there. It's cool stuff like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that sort of stuff.
It's meta.
It's games like, I mean, things like that that can give a new or cool, different game experience are the things I like. I loved Boktai on the Game Boy because it came with a light sensing device and used sunlight to power the game. It was a bit cumbersome to actually do.
Yeah,
but
it was
a cool
busted
concept. I'd love to see a game like that where you could just use regular light.
Or how about an example? WarioWare Twisted, or you know, and how it had that cool like gyroscopic thing where you, I don't know, that was a really cool game.
And think of how that can affect games like Limbo, which was a game where light and darkness were at war with each other in constant gameplay devices. That could be a really cool control point for games like that.
That is a really good point. Where like you could be in a dark area and you'd have to like turn on the light in your room and like hold the system up to it, and then the area would light up or something.
See, I would think that would be cooler with someone like Kojima on the helm, where Kojima loves to do stupid little meta things where like, just like there'd be so many possibilities to do a stupid meta thing with that.
And
it's just like, I can't read this. It's too dark. I wish there was more light. And you're just like, oh, yeah, good thing you turned it up.
And I think the good thing about it is it's not like the Wii or the Kinect where you have to get out of a comfortable gaming position to do this stuff. You can just rotate a little and you'll be able to figure that stuff out. And I think that's another big strength of it, is that it has motion controls. It has touchscreen stuff. And not that the touchscreen on the DS, because the touchscreen on the DS was perfect types of gameplay. But it's using these things in a way that it doesn't make you uncomfortable to do, which I think is great.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall we're really happy with it. The one thing that I'm a little down on right now is I was really hyped up about like the awesome launch lineup that originally was sort of announced. And I feel like now it's kind of a little lacking in great games. I mean, it's if Gravity Rush had come out and you know, I just think, and I still have a conspiracy theory that like that game is too good to be a launch title, and that's why they didn't release it. I mean, it's just like launch titles just can't be awesome. I'm not saying Uncharted isn't a good game. It is, and we're going to talk about that here. But it's just that there's very little to play between Uncharted and Luminesce. What else do you want to play, Jordan?
Well, I want to play Touch My Katamari because okay, I like right. that. I mean, and I think there's a variety of genres, which is something you don't necessarily. There's, I mean, if you want, well, okay, there's a lot of racing games. You know, Wipeout,
sure
Asphalt.
Are. Mod Asphalt doesn't racers. Count. That's a game. That's a like a mobile phone game ported. And the same thing with that. Dungeon game. That's a mobile phone game ported. That does not count. That is not legitimate. That's BS. It's a mobile phone game.
I think you're being a little harsh to say it doesn't count. But I'm not saying I want to buy it.
Do those games by UFO that were released on Wii, like you know what I'm talking about? Those games that like, you know, those Wii games that are like $19.99 to start with and they're complete garbage. I mean, to me, they don't exist. You know what I mean? That you can like, it's like. It's like a knockoff of like I can't think of any of the names of them right now, but if you heard the names, you'd be like, oh yeah, that's a bunch of bullshit.
Well, or even if the launch lineup isn't, you know, to your liking, I think there's a much stronger title of games set for the next few months.
No doubt.
Than the 3DS had.
I'm just saying that 3DS right now, even has. Yeah. Right now, there's very little for me to play. That's all.
Well, again, I think that's another great thing is that you got the PSP library.
Yeah, that's cool. Although, yeah there's, what I'm noticing though is a lot of the games that I really wanted to play from PSP aren't there. Like the Silent Hill games aren't there, like Siphon Filter is not there, Crisis Core is not there, Kingdom Hearts is not there. A lot of the games that I really wanted to play aren't there.
Well, see, for me, there's plenty. I mean, I agree on some of those Crisis Core and Kingdom Hearts I want to play, but I've got, you know, I got Dissidia Duodecim Final Fantasy, I got Patapon 2, Final Fantasy Tactics, War of the Lions.
Did you pick that up?
Yeah. I still want to get Tactics Ogre. I want to get Legend of the Heroes, Trails in the Sky. So there are a lot of games on my list.
Are those all full priced or are they discount?
Okay. Yes.
There are some that are discounted.
Tactics Ogre is freaking full price.
Tactics Ogre is 20.
I thought it was 30.
It's only 20 bucks?
It's only 20 bucks.
Thought it was 30.
That's nice.
Yeah. And I only picked, I picked Tactics, Final Fantasy Tactics because it was only 10.
Yeah.
I just got, you know, I wanted to get more variety in my games. But so I mean, there's plenty on there.
Have you started playing Tactics yet?
That's the one I haven't started yet, just because it's. I know the opening to that probably going to be a little longer.
Yeah,
it's not too bad.
It's not.
I mean, I've gone through a learning curve four or five times.
It's a learning curve.
Well, I mean, not the learning curve because I've played a lot of Tactics games. I just went with Patapon because I figured it'd go right into the gameplay.
Yeah.
How is that? I'm thinking about picking it up. It's only $8 right now.
Yeah.
Patapon is totally worth $8.
Yeah.
I love Patapon.
I've only played it a little.
Yeah, Patapon 2 is even better than the first one. My only beef with Patapon 2 is I thought the game was very doable, but for some reason the last boss, I couldn't beat him because no matter what happened, I couldn't dodge his attacks, and then it would just wipe out my entire team. That's my only beef with the game, and I don't know exactly what was going on with that.
Got it.
But, I mean, I'm digging it so far, and that really is a game to me that people have raved about that game since the first one, and I've seen videos for it, but it's really don't get a sense of it until you actually play that game.
It's just so goofy, you know? It's just so goofy, but it's got its own, you know, niche that you just really get into.
Well, if I understand it correctly, it's like a side-scrolling strategy RPG with rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be pretty.
And it's as goofy as Katamari.
Yeah. It's got a style, which I really like, and I find myself bopping my head to the rhythm so that I can keep in time with it, and I like that.
Yeah.
I love rhythm games that aren't Guitar Hero.
You never got into Guitar Hero?
No, I like.
Oh, okay.
We played
You're
Rock
just
Band.
Sick as hell of it
I'm
now,
just saying,
yeah.
People tend to make the rhythm genre synonymous with Rock Band, which it's not.
Okay, well let's move on and talk a little bit about our experience with some of the other games for the system. I guess let's start off with Uncharted. This is the game that I think we both picked up.
Yeah.
You know, I think you've been on our last podcast called it, you know, the clear system seller.
Without Gravity Rush. Well, I mean, even if Gravity Rush
even
was
still,
here,
it
would be the system seller because of the name recognition.
Right. So I mean, I think it's a good game. It's obviously not on par with the Uncharted's on PlayStation 3, but I don't think that was ever possible, maybe.
I like it a lot, and I think it plays the exact same. I think I mean, there are some Uncharted 3 things I've heard that aren't in there. Like, you can't throw grenades back.
Can you throw grenades at all? I haven't gotten to them yet.
Yeah, they do show up. I was wondering about that. And that's okay. Where the touch screen comes in. And that's one of the cool things is that because there's no second bumpers.
Right.
There's a little grenade icon on the screen, and you tap it, and you'll throw a grenade towards the center of the screen, or you can tap and pull it and then aim where you want to throw the grenade. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I always have trouble lobbing grenades in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's something in all games.
It allows for a little bit. I mean, it's not revolutionarily different, but it's a way of working around the system's limitations, which aren't that many. Again, like we said earlier.
No, because, I mean, you have a full back pad, too.
Yeah, and honestly, that's my biggest problem with the game is I don't think this is the game that they should have tried to show off the system strengths with.
Yeah.
Not this hardcore as they did. I mean, you've got games like Little Deviants, which I don't care about. I mean, I've said that before. But if you want to see what the system can do, I think it's a game like that that should do it. Because when I'm playing Uncharted, I don't want to have to swipe the enemies to do melee finishers.
I think the thing with Uncharted is this was more of a message to tell people about the system than it was anything in the world, you know? Because you talk about Little Deviants, maybe showing off there. But Uncharted was, you know what this system's going to be about now because we're starting it with this style of game.
Here's what it can do.
Yeah.
It hurts the experience in a lot of places. And I'm trying to remember because there's it'll be times where the back touchpad comes into play with that game. And so I'll be trying to do something and I'll accidentally touch something and switch or it's hard to get a sense of it because the back touchpad can be sensitive. If it's in a game that it's applicable to, it can F with it.
It doesn't interfere with that. That's not so much the problem I had. The problem I had, and it isn't that big a problem because you just have to be choosy about when you use melee. But the way the melee system works is you roll up to a dude, you push a button or you tap on him, and then it kicks off this little mini game kind of where you have to, you know, tap the attack button or tap in line with this little fist icon that shows up a couple times. And then you have to proceed to do swipes in the direction it tells you to do them in. And this would all be fine. It still would be unnecessary, but it would be fine if it weren't that other guys were shooting you at the time.
Well, I mean, that's with any Uncharted, really.
No, but the thing is, in any Uncharted, you can cancel out of the attacks at that point. That's the difference. A lot of people will complain about this, and it's definitely an issue.
Oh, well, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you can cancel out of like, if you're like punching someone, and you're starting to get, you know, whooped up on by all these different guns. Wow, I hate that expression. I don't know why I just used it. If you're starting to get played by all these guns, you can stop meleeing and run. Whereas in this game, if you're locked into this long animation sequence, you know, you can die that way while these live bullets are blowing your head out.
Yeah,
it's good though.
That's it. It's good. It controls great. I have no problem with aiming.
I do. I find it very good, but not. I have some problem with aiming. I've had to tweak with the sensitivity to try to get it just right. Sometimes I overshoot their head. I'm trying to get it just on there. I don't know. I haven't found a sweet spot.
Oh well, I haven't had a single problem with it, honestly. Mm-hmm. I mean, it took a little. Obviously, at first, because of the kind of the feel of the buttons and the sticks.
Maybe that's it. I mean, I'm only on like the seventh or eighth.
Yeah. I think, and
again, there's like 30, isn't there?
33. Yeah, which is more than any Uncharted game, though. It's supposed to be shorter.
They're shorter. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing I really like about it, though, is that when the system controls work in an interesting way, it is really cool. I like being able to go into sniper view and then tweak it with moving because
and the camera's cool.
Because it's different than other things because it's not like with a Wiimote when I'm actually like looking, it's like there's a way to it where it feels like I'm actually looking through the scope. So when I'm moving it, it feels like it feels better than any other way that's tried to emulate that where I'm actually up on the screen and I'm staring through the scope and it feels cool to do it that way. It's just when there's so many things you don't have to do with the touch controls and the motion controls in that game that the ones that you do have to do feel forced and really irk me. And that's been my biggest problem is things like melee or things like having to cut bamboo with a swipes. See,
but on the other hand, I think it's very elegant the way that they integrated that little, there's a little sidebar that sort of swoops in from the side of the right side of the screen. And it gives you some great options. And what I really love about this game, this is something I like better than any Uncharted game so far, which is, I'm pretty amazing that they pulled this off on the handheld version, and that is the treasures and the trophies and all of that stuff. It's handled much better. Instead of just being random, like 120 treasures that are just located around the world, you pick them up and you see a little picture of this, you know, Indiana Jones little trinket, rolling around on your screen, and it's like, wow, it's a ceremonial dagger from, you know, Amun-Ra or some nonsense. It doesn't have any matter. It doesn't matter. In this one, there are these mysteries to solve. And there again, mysteries, I'm into it. But there's mysteries to solve. And so you'll be collecting an array of things throughout the game, and each of them get categorized into different mysteries, and they solve the mystery one little puzzle piece at a time. So in each one, there'll be artifacts you have to collect in each chapter. There will be rubbings you'll have to find and rub. There's secret areas you have to uncover to find other items. There are still treasures to find. There's like 40 of these little ivory things. But then the really cool extra thing is they took a page from Dead Rising, the first one, and there's a camera.
Yeah, see, I'm not crazy about that.
You don't like the camera.
I mean,
oh,
it's
I love
all
taking
right.
pictures.
I just, it kind of, I don't know.
I
feel
love
like
taking
they just,
pictures, man.
I just feel like they took one type of busy work find stuff to and replaced it with another. I mean, not that that's
but,
bad.
But no, they
just...
didn't. They didn't. That's the thing. In that one, it was just find stuff, blah. In this one, it's find various different things. First of all, instead of just being all in one category, there's a variety of things. Second of all, they matter now. They have stories
they matter,
with them.
Really.
They have stories with them. They matter a hell of a lot more than collecting random nothing.
I just don't think there's a lot there. But that's me. And if you're getting stuff out of it, that's cool.
I love it. I think it's great.
I think overall, though, it's a great game. I'm really digging it.
I'm really surprised you know the collection aspect doesn't. Not are you doing are you pursuing all those items and stuff?
Yeah, I'm collecting stuff.
Yeah,
I collect stuff in the regular Uncharted too. If I see.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's that different.
You don't like the camera?
It's all right.
All right.
I
and
think
zooming
it can
in
be
with
really,
the touchpad.
No, I just think it can be really irksome trying to get it to get to 100% sometimes.
Oh. Okay.
Where it wants you to fiddle and do all this little tiny. Where if I see the item you want me to take a picture of. I took a picture of it. I shouldn't have to get the right zoom and the right angle, and it's just kind of stuff like that.
I hear what you're saying, but again, that's like a page from Dead Rising, though, in a way.
Well, I didn't like the camera in Dead Rising. So.
Really? Tim, weigh in on this with me. Did you like the camera in Dead Rising?
Yeah, I love making goofy pictures. I'm just like, oh, man, that zombie's got the Mega Man outfit on.
I like that more than...
And then I'm bashing his skull in.
See, no, and I will say I like Dead Rising cameras more, but in this one, it gives you a picture you have to take as opposed to just having fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't
know. A collectible. I just think they did it. You're going to have collectibles in every game. It's a necessary evil or necessary good, whatever you think of it. This is a creative take on it. Anyway, we also played a couple demos. I'll start off by saying I played the Little Deviants demo, much to Jordan's eye-rolling chagrin.
I don't have chagrin.
I'm eye-rolling as well.
they all just rolled their eyes at me, and you can't be here in the studio, but let me just tell you, I'm being demoralized with little facial gestures. The guy, Cal Lightman from Lie to Me, would be all over these guys. But Little Deviants is just, I got to admit, it wasn't very fun. I played the demo originally in GameStop, and that one had this tapping game where you tapped on the back screen to like kill guys and tapped on the front, depending on which way they were facing. That was fun. This one only had two little types. One of them was exactly, what's the one, the AR game in Wii, in 3DS AR game?
There's... Which one?
The main one where you're shooting.
Oh, Face Raiders?
Yeah, it's Face Raiders. Period. Except you don't put faces on the dudes. Just you shoot dudes, but you're running in your world. So that's one of the two. And the other one is this one where you deform the terrain to move a ball around, and you deform it by touching the back touchpad.
So
and that's
it's
cool.
Also, like the 3DS one.
Oh, I didn't play that. What is that?
There's one where you move a ball around based on the way the terrain is formed.
Oh wow! I never even saw that. Then it's exactly like that. Yeah. Yeah, so it's basically completely, what do you call it, derivative. But anyway, so...
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy it, so you guys will be happy to hear that. And then...
Well, no, if you had fun with it, I'd
I said I didn't.
For, no, I'm just saying, if you'd enjoyed it, that'd have been great, but I mean, it just didn't look that great.
Yeah, it's not. It's not. All right. Anyway, go ahead.
The main demo I played, and I've actually spent a lot of time with, just because I didn't get the game version, which I want, is the Luminous demo.
Yeah.
I love Luminous. It was, when I had a PSP, it's probably my most fondly remembered game because that game was so wildly cool and creative.
Luminous kicks ass. It was like the one like really, I think it was a launch title, wasn't it? Or like right near launch. It was definitely near launch.
It was near launch.
And it was a game that everyone said you got to have. And I wouldn't have bought a puzzle game like that, especially for like $40. But everyone was like, you got to get it, got to get it. I was going on a trip. And when I picked that game up, we were fighting over my PSP that whole trip.
It's just a fun game, and I think this one, It doesn't change a lot, but when you have a formula that works, you don't necessarily have to. It just added a lot of cool new songs, from what I've heard online, because the demo only has two songs. You can play a little of a third before it goes to black.
It's a freaking tease. it comes on for like 3 seconds, man, and it's like this new song, and it looks really cool, and it's like,
yeah,
by the game.
But it's cool just because, you know, there's animated skits that go on in the background that are kind of cool. There's some new items. There's a randomizer ball that can help when you're, you know, facing a screen full of gems that have no connections. Though it can also really hurt you if it shows up early on and it screws your combos. There's also in the past, it had the ball that would, you know, sit there, and if you made a square out of it, it would destroy all of the similar colored ones. Now it just does it automatically, which, you know, is to help kind of, because you could really abuse that before and build ridiculously large combos.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's avatar powers, though there's not a lot going on in the demo. The demo just, like, the avatar power is that it makes one of those two crystals appear.
And what's cool also, though, is that you can tap on the back touchpad to, I don't do this because it's actually more work, trouble than it's worth, but if you tap, it, like, accelerates the speed at which this power-up charges.
Huh.
Oh, you didn't know that yet?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you tap on the back of the touchpad.
But I keep going back to that demo because, man, Luminous is fun, and I really want to get the full version.
Well, let me ask you this. This is the big problem I had with Luminous on the PSP. I loved the game, but because I wasn't good enough at it, I only ever saw 4 or 5 songs. Is it like that only, or can you choose what level you want to play at this time?
I think there's still a main Odyssey mode.
Where you have to play straight through?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That bothers me. Why do I? Because that means you're, by definition, you're going to play the first song 10 times more often than you're going to play the 15th song.
Yeah.
And that bothers me.
I don't know. There might be a way to kind of get around that.
Yeah.
I think there is song selection. I think there's different modes that start you off with different songs.
What did you think of that, Tim, about Luminous? About the fact that you have to play the first, second, and third to ever play the fourth every time?
I never really had issues with that.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was fine for me.
I think I kind of like that because I liked the idea of, you know, getting further got me new songs and new maps, and I loved doing that. Even if I'd have to play through certain ones that I hate over and over again, because sometimes, you know, when you're doing a great combo and then you get to one where the timeline is moving like molasses and you're stuck building on that, it can be a bummer. But at the same time, that's part of the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I guess let's move on to PSP games on the Vita. You've done a lot more of this than me, Jordan. I'm going to let you handle
okay.
it. Tell me about it.
Well, so far I've gotten... That was kind of my main reason to get a Vita right away. I probably would have waited if not for the fact that Gravity Rush is coming out in a few months, and that game seems awesome.
Really awesome.
But also, unlike the 3DS, which I had a DS, so I played most of the DS games, and I would have had to hunt down cartridges and stuff for that if I did want to do it. But with the Vita, you know, you get access to the huge back catalog of PSP games that are on the PSN store, and they have a list of ones that are supposedly the only ones available, though if you have them on your PS3 system, you can kind of do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Some not, though. So people are saying some don't work.
Okay, I don't know.
Anyway,
but there's a lot warning, that have tested. So, I mean, you know, Valkyria Chronicles 2 isn't on that list of games, but if you have it on your PS2 or your PS3, you can download it there.
Okay.
And so there are games like that I want to play, because I really want to play Grand Theft Auto Vice City Stories, and I want to play Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker and Valkyria Chronicles 2.
I think the thing with the PSP, like in general, is PSP had a bunch of solid games, but it was never enough to make you want to go buy the system.
Yeah.
And so I like with the Vita that all those games that you know you never wanted to buy the system to get, it's like, oh, I can download them now. Yeah, I totally do that.
And that's what I've done, because so far I've gotten Patapon 2,
yeah,
which is really fun. Final Fantasy Tactics War of the Line, which I haven't started yet, but I've always wanted to play through that.
This will be your first time playing it?
On the PSP, yeah.
Oh, okay.
It'll be my first time playing Final Fantasy Tactics ever.
Huh. I love Final Fantasy Tactics.
That's so many people do.
One of those games I have so many fond memories with, but yeah, it's really
cool. What makes it really awesome?
I guess you have to like tactical RPGs, but Tactics Ogre came out before it, and so that sort of defined the genre, but it was so solid on so many different levels. I mean, all the classes were really diverse, but they were all very usable. Some were clearly better than others, but, you know, that's when you start to learn how to game the system. But that's the thing. It's like it was very accessible, but you could also tweak it and do these masterfully powerful combos that you just, you know, you'd never think to do in the first place. And a thing that's called the Calculator is like the best class in the game. And, you know, when I first hear it, it's like, what a weird class. Because basically the way it works is you target different numeric variables of enemies. So you'll be like, all right, every enemy who's on a elevation that is a multiple of 3 will get hit by this spell, and then they'll all get hit by it. And so once you become really good with that, you can just abuse the hell out of that. And it's just stuff like that where it's just like, oh man, I really feel I know this game now.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to playing that one because I am a big SRPG fan, or because I liked Final Fantasy Tactics when I played it the first time. I really liked, I love Disgaea. So just games like that have always been something I love.
You going to get Prinny?
Yeah, Prinny's on my list just because it's only $10.
You can get the first Prinny because I've heard the first one's like a lot harder.
Well, I don't mind that. I mean, the second Prinny's 30, so.
I know. and it's called Operation Panties, dude.
Well, that's
so
that's,
disconcerting.
That's Disgaea.
That surprises you.
I don't play Disgaea.
That's like all their humor, you know.
They talk about freaking panties and dudes. And
the Prinny says dude after every sentence.
They do. It's part of the.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, that's part of. That's Prinny school. That's rule 101 is saying dude. That was in Disgaea 4.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool, actually.
And the other game I got was Dissidia 12 or Dissidia Duodecim Final Fantasy, which I know Tim and Rich don't like.
I don't really have anything in it, but I really wish Square Enix would just stop making absurd names for things, you know? It's like Dissidia Duodecim, just like.
Or Dream Drop Distance?
Yeah, it's just like, get a. What are they trying to say? It's not a Japanese word. It's not an English word. It's not a Latin word that you're adapting to anything. It's just nonsense that makes a sound.
I don't know. It is a very odd battle system, and you kind of have to be ready to read a lot because they throw a lot of written tutorials at you to kind of figure out the system. And I've been doing that just because I wanted to get into it, and I paid $30 for it, so I better get into it because I can't return that. But actually, I'm really liking it. And I think as I'm getting a hand on the battle system, it is fun. It also didn't hurt that the very first villains you fight are Kefka and Kuja teamed up. And those are my two favorite Final Fantasies, as I said last week. So,
is there a story?
Yeah, there's a story. It's not necessarily coherent.
Have you played it, Tim?
I read. I was really thinking of picking it up at one point because I was thinking it was very cool and right up my alley. But I was very
hesitant. Because there's a mix of Final Fantasy and a fighting.
Yeah, and so like, I like Final Fantasy games. I like fighting games. The idea of pulling a summon in a fighting game and, you know, fighting with that, that's pretty cool to me. But I was kind of leaned towards caution and, you know, I don't really regret it now.
It's odd because I wouldn't really call it a fighting game.
It is so weird.
It's more of an action game.
But let me tell you, there's people that love it.
Yeah.
This has happened to me more than once. I've been walking around. You know, every time you see somebody playing like a PSP or a DS in public, unless it's like a little kid, you really want to know what they're playing. I do, at least.
I have had that.
I got that too.
Whenever I see them, I always want to know what they're playing. So I'm the kind of person who goes up and asks often. And two different times, or maybe three, that I've done that, out of the 10 times I've ever done it, they were playing Dissidia or Dissidia 2, and they were totally fixated on it. They were like, you know, those kind of people where they're like holding up the controller and like make grunting and like just like so fucking into it, man. And they loved it. And I was like, what is it about that game? And they were like, it's Final Fantasy. I just love it. I mean, they just loved it.
Well, I'll go further than that. I think it is a very interesting concept for the battle system, the way that you can do bravery or HP attacks, and bravery attacks steal your opponent's bravery so that yours goes higher and theirs goes lower. And HP attacks are based on how much bravery you have. So you can hit
either
them.
Or.
Yeah. So you can hit them and after you attack them once with a big bravery attack, your bravery goes away and you go back to zero. So it's a balance, and I find that cool. It's strategic in a way that I wasn't really expecting from it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know what to expect.
I gotta try it.
Watching videos, it's really hard to tell what's going on.
You know what? Another game that's like that where I have no freaking clue how you would play it is Crisis Core. That game is crazy. It is a crazy game. No, I actually picked it up when I had a PSP. It was only $10 or something, and I tried to play it, and I didn't have the time at the time to really invest in it. Man, it's so weird and complicated, and that battle system is like, it doesn't really explain it. I don't know. That's a crazy game.
Yeah.
Answer me this. Were you about to say something, Jordan?
Oh, I was just going to say, but yeah, those are the PSP games I've gotten. I'll probably get more, and you know, I'll be talking about them in the coming weeks.
Let me ask you this, Tim, because you don't have a Vita yet. Are you planning on getting one at some point?
Yeah, I think I am. You know, like I definitely think between the Vita and the 3DS, I'm kind of leaning towards the Vita. Just because I think it's got stronger games, and I just like it in general. You know, I like the idea of downloading a lot of PSP games because I thought there's lots of quality games on them that I never got around to wanting to go get. But you know, if I was sitting in my house and I could download it for $10, I'd sure as hell do that.
What are some of those? The ones you know, there's PSP games you've always wanted to play but didn't get to.
Well, we mentioned Crisis Core there. I like Crisis Core. There's Valkyria Chronicles, which I played before. Valkyria Profile. Anyone play that on the PlayStation or PlayStation 2?
Lenith and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a solid series of RPGs, which would be downloadable in other games. And there was a Star Ocean. Star Ocean 2 got remade. So did Star Ocean. The First Story was also on the PSP.
Yeah, that's true.
All those games were just really solid old school RPGs that I never wanted to go out and, you know, go buy or spend $30 or $40 on because it didn't seem worth it. But if I could download that on one thing for $10, I'm sure as hell do that, you know? And so that seems very appealing to me just because, like, I would just love keeping that with me and, you know, having an entire library of games that I could just play that were relatively cheap, you know?
And I think coming off that, because you mentioned the RPGs, the one bummer for me, really the biggest bummer for me is that, you know, last week I got some PSN credit so I could get some games, and I was going, well, I really want to play Xenogears. But, you know, you can't put PS1 classics on there yet. Yeah, you're going to be able to.
I wonder when.
That's the thing that they should do for a while. It's just like,
How much is Xenogears?
It's $10.
I've never played that game.
Xenogears is so good. That's one of my favorite games.
Right?
It is so long, but it's one of those games where it's just like, it's so huge.
You know what the first thing I'm going to do when I get that capability on my Vita is?
What's that?
Play Final Fantasy IX for the first time.
Nothing wrong with that.
Can you imagine how fun that's going to be? Going on an adventure, man. Oh, I can't wait with all my buddies.
The other really cool thing about the Vita to me is the remote play, which they expounded on last week, was that it's not just a matter of, you know, finishing a game on your Vita. It's that if you get there are going to be certain games, and there's already two, and one of them is Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3. If you buy it on the Vita.
And the other one's even cooler.
Hustle Kings.
It's a fucking cool game.
If you have that for the PS3, then you can get it for the Vita. I mean, they're pushing this idea of being able to play games on both systems.
And when he says you can get it on the Vita, it means you get it for free, basically. It's just right on it already.
Yeah, you get both versions.
Like, you get a DLC code, a downloadable code for your Vita, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I guess.
You can just play it through the remote play on it, like,
yeah, and you can switch your data. And it's telling, you know, our last big topic is kind of looking to the future. And, you know, it's telling that Sony wants to make the Vita a system for serious gaming and that you can take and that it can be a PS3 in your pocket. Even if it's not necessarily as graphically powerful, you can take the games from a PS3 and play them on there.
I can't believe that still. When I go out and I'm linked into my PS3 and I see on this beautiful screen games that are actually powered by that PS3, that's going to blow my mind.
It's a very impressive system, and, you know, we've mentioned before that it, you know, it's a perilous time for handheld gaming because of the market, but it's stuff like this. It's cool things that bring the console experience into it that are going to hopefully prove its viability, and, you know, I have hopes for the Vita for that respect.
No doubt. I think that the future is very bright for this system. You said that the Japanese sales are getting better.
Yeah, they had a spike when Gravity Rush came out.
Gravity Rush. I mean, that game looks amazing. The system has so much potential. When you look at it, it's just rife with possibilities. You know, I'm holding it right now and I'm just looking it over, and it's just like there's so many different ways to input, and we're just scratching the surface of it. And yet there's so much. I already have good memories with it. It feels solid in your hand, unlike the 3DS. That's another thing. 3DS is like, it feels like it's falling apart. I mean, I love my 3DS, but the back screen comes a little wobbly the minute you get it, and it just gets worse.
I haven't had that experience.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I
every single person.
That said, I think this is much. I do think this is a sleeker system.
This system is way more better built. The build quality on this system is far superior, in my opinion, than the 3DS. I just think it's really solid. The menu system I love. And Netflix. Netflix is really great, too. Let me mention that. I know. I just think that this beautiful. Watching Netflix on this beautiful screen is just like. I don't know. Back in the day, you'd pay like $700 for like a portable. I remember I had I asked for it for like two Christmases and a birthday. I asked to get this video Walkman thing, and what it was like a little Sony like 8mm VCR attached to a little screen, and you could bring it with you. And it was, you know, a lot of money, and it let you do basically not as good a job of what this does. I mean, it's a portable portal into entertainment. I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
What future games do we have that are we going to be picking up? Gravity Rush.
Gravity Rush. Persona 4 the Golden.
When's this coming out?
I'm not sure when that one's coming out. But it is my, you know, favorite RPG ever. It's adding a lot to it. There's a new playable character, new scenarios, and the thing I liked about that Persona 4 wasn't just the dungeons and the story. It was that it spent a lot of time just hanging out with the characters because they were high school students and they would do stuff together on the weekends and things like that. So the idea of having a lot of that added to it is fun. Plus, it's just a fun battle system and that I want to go back to.
Resistance Burning Skies, for me, because I love some Resistance. That's coming out in May, actually, also. I realized that, so I'm excited to hear about that. Yeah.
The Jack and Daxter HD collection is coming to the Vita.
As is the Metal Gear collection.
Yeah, I love Jack and Daxter. I haven't played those games in years now, so I could see going back to
what that. What else? I'm starting to get excited here.
I'm trying to think. Gravity Rush, obviously.
Yeah, I was just going to say that as a joke. You beat me to it. All right, last thing we need to cover. Are we sweetening at all on the name? Everybody, when Vita first was announced to be called the Vita, everyone hated the name. How are you guys feeling about it now?
I never had a problem with the name.
Really?
No.
I
could have sworn everybody was like, I hate it.
No, I like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't know who you're talking about.
Okay. I'm talking about the freaking enthusiast press, man. I heard this. The worst name ever. And
no, Wii's still the worst name ever.
Yeah.
Oh, that never.
Well, I think Wii U is worse.
Wii. It sounds
like a school, man. Doesn't it? Like Wii University? I don't know. But, you know, hey, it didn't hurt the sales of Wii any, did it?
Yeah.
All right, well, that's our first impressions on the Vita. I'm sure we will talk a little bit more about how we're enjoying it in 2 weeks on our next podcast. We will also be talking about the history, well, saying goodbye to PSP and DS.
Yeah.
We'll be...
that's about right, yeah.
Fortunately, we have, you know, someone who's well-versed in both of those systems, which is good.
Yeah, we'll get Tim more involved on that one and...
I'll probably cry a lot about there never being another Advance Wars game.
Because
God knows they're not going to make another one.
On that note, this has been The Joy of Gaming, Episode 4, and I'm your host, Rich Lepore. Special thanks to our special guest, Adam.
Oh, thank you guys for having me. I enjoyed it.
And
Jordan Alseca saying bye.
And Tim McNeil.
And we will talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye-bye.